Welcome to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro, powered by Beyond, where we dive heart first into all things events in the nonprofit world. I'm Amy Milne, your host and CEO of Beyond and the Nonprofit Event Society, where we believe that your events matter. You're not just hosting an event, you're inviting people to join you in changing the world. We're here to talk tricks of the trade and share tales from the trenches so you can produce epic events that inspire participants, raise more money, and change lives. Let's dive in. I am beyond excited to welcome our guest, Jamie Lamont, Director, Special Events and Sponsorship at SickKids Foundation in Toronto, Ontario, as our very first guest. Woohoo! In this episode, Jamie gets real about signature events at SickKids and the importance of taking a closer look at your event portfolio so you can stop executing events just because and start producing events that will make an even bigger impact on your organization. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me on. I'm excited for the opportunity and to share and to hopefully enlighten and enrich people's adventures in the event charity event fundraising world.
Awesome.
As you said, I'm the director of special events and sponsorship at SickKids Foundation. So I've been there for going on 7 years now, which is kind of crazy, but pretty cool too. Before that, I had my own consultancy for about 10 years and in the conference and event management and marketing worlds, and then worked in public policy before that. So had a very varied career getting here, but happy to be here and happy to have a great discussion today.
Well, and I mean, we know this, but our listeners won't, is that you and I kind of swapped seats in this whole event nonprofit world. Yeah. I sort of took your seat on the outside as a consultant, and you almost physically are sitting in my old seat at SickKids.
Pretty much. Yeah. No, we definitely crossed swords at some point. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't actually ever remember the first time we met. I feel like I've just always known you.
I actually was thinking about that this morning. We first met, and because you probably won't remember this, I actually came to SickKids when I had my consultancy to chat with you about how my team could help your team. And we had like an hour long conversation about events and what we're doing. And, you know, that was probably the first time I had officially met you.
So, it's now that you say it, I remember we were in the big boardroom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a long time ago too. It was probably
like 15 years.
Yeah, probably. Yep.
So as we date and age ourselves in this conversation, which is never a bad thing, because I think while we're, you know, seasoned, we have things to share. And I think both of us are also super open to learning new things. And so I would love our listeners to learn some stuff from you. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit, or tell us a little bit about SickKids Foundation. You're one of the biggest in Canada. You are the biggest children's hospital in Canada.
We are, yes.
I believe you're one of the largest fundraising foundations in Canada.
Yeah, we're definitely up there in the top tier, for sure.
And what I love about SickKids, having been inside and now you're there, is that events really are important to the organization, and they're really recognized by the organization, by the donors, by your colleagues. So tell me a little bit about how your department is set up. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the events and such.
For sure. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think events are a very important part of what we call the donor journey. You know, we're definitely a touch point for the mass in a lot of cases, and in some cases for a very specific group of people. So, you know, we've tried to tailor our event portfolio based on different audiences so that we can meet the needs and look for fundraising, you know, sources at different levels. So not everybody's a major gift donor, obviously. So we've been very aware that, especially being a children's hospital, families and their extended families become very important in the event mix, right? So, you know, our event portfolio has kind of gone up and down. And obviously with, you know, the pandemic over the last few years, we've had to adjust a little bit. But for the most part, we've continued to kind of grow in terms of revenue, not necessarily in size, which I don't think is a bad thing. Mm-mm. I think for us, we've been able to kind of navigate those choppy waters a little bit and, you know, really, really have a time to kind of deep dive on the portfolio. So, you know, currently, we have a large scale family based event called Sick Kids Get Loud. It's essentially a walk, what we call a festival, that to celebrate the Sick Kids community.
And would that be peer-to-peer fundraising? Tell us a little bit about, I'm going to interject as you tell us about your stuff, but tell me a little bit about Get Loud.
Yeah, for sure. So Get Loud is definitely a peer-to-peer based fundraising event. So we offer the opportunity for individuals, families, or corporate teams to get involved. When we're doing it live, which we did this past year and in previous years in COVID, we kind of went, well, we had to go virtual.
Can't get loud together when you're all at home.
Yeah. But, you know, we basically offer, you know, so you pay a registration fee, very, very minimal. I think it's $30 or maybe $25. That depends on the year. And then we've had a minimum fundraising set at $250 per person for anyone 18 or older.
Okay.
And what that was allowing us to do is not only kind of drive fundraising efforts, you know, and try and ensure that we're getting to a certain level, but also that was your kind of ticket into the festival piece. So anyone could come and join us for the walk and the opening ceremony celebration kind of piece. But then once you got back from the walk, if you hadn't raised that minimum, you were treated nicely, but kind of sent on your way.
Thank you, but no thank you, because we're not in the concert business.
Exactly.
We're in the fundraising business.
Exactly. So, you know, we've had that model in place for the 5 years of Sick Kids Get Loud. And, you know, it's worked fairly well for us. So every year we probably, in terms of peer-to-peer fundraising, we usually raise about $1.1 million, $1.2 million, somewhere in there.
And seven figures.
And we were able to maintain that during COVID too. So, you know, even in the virtual space, I think just the community, because it was so community focused and the family focused, I think it just resonated with them. But that being said, you know, we're never shy to, you know, have a look at things and change things up, which I'm sure you know.
Well, because I created a signature event for Sick Kids, and then Jamie shows up and goes, "See ya."
Well, it was time. It was time for
no. It totally was, and it's amazing, Jamie, because one of the things I love about you and when you started Sick Kids is that you actually looked at the portfolio strategically, and you didn't just get in my. You can correct me, but you didn't just get rid of things that weren't working.
Yeah.
You looked at things strategically and said, does this make sense for where the organization is going now?
Yeah.
Where is the event world going now?
Yeah.
Because I do know you also sunsetted some other events that were raising significant dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, based on the resources we had, and everybody is challenged with the resource piece. You know, even a shop as large as we are, you know, I have 12, sometimes 13 or 14 people on the team. Even with that size of team, we are very aware of market conditions and the environment that's happening. And, you know, I think having the ability to critically look at an event and say, you know, to senior management and team, hey guys, like, you know, we think there's other opportunities elsewhere, or we think it's time that this event kind of went, you know, was sunsetted.
For sure.
So that, you know, gives us an opportunity to kind of either look at a new opportunity or just, you know, maintain what we have and make what we have even better. So it's not always about, and I've tried to kind of instill this with my team, it's not always about the rapid growth just in terms of number of events but you know, maintaining revenue or increasing revenue with the bench strength that we already have. So you know, done a lot of work around that, and it continues today, really.
That's awesome. And so Get Loud is your signature peer-to-peer fundraising event, if we were to put things in buckets. So that's your big one, open to your entire the world. It speaks to 0 to 99. If you're 100, you can come as well, kind of thing.
Absolutely. And it's fully branded. It's a Sick Kids branded, Sick Kids controlled, Sick Kids run event. You know, our marketing team does all the branding and the signage and, you know, all of that piece. We, you know, we're in charge of the media buy. We're in charge of the execution of the event. All, you know, the peer-to-peer coaching, the phone calls, everything comes through the Sick Kids events team.
Awesome. So strategy through execution.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Completely. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, what I've noticed, or what I've worked on over the last few years is we've developed a very strong digital-based portfolio in terms of peer-to-peer.
Cool.
So back in 2016, SickKids Foundation launched the Great Cycle Challenge Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's a property that we took on a license from an agency out of Australia.
Cool. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's an event that I actually participate in and have raised quite a bit of money myself in.
But yes, you have. I have seen all of your asks.
There you go.
Because you can't get me if you don't ask.
Yeah. So yeah, Great Cycle Challenge is basically, it's a peer-to-peer event that's based in the fact that you can ride anywhere you want, anytime you want during a certain month of the year. So
awesome.
Now it started in June when we first did it. And then during the pandemic, we changed it to August. And that's actually worked out pretty well for us. So now we've kind of left it in the August timeframe. So from August 1st to 31st, you can track your rides through the Great Cycle Challenge app or through Strava or Map My Ride. You can do all your fundraising through a peer-to-peer app that they've created and that we kind of maintain. And, you know, we've engaged this past year, we had 25,000 riders from all across Canada doing this. We raised about $8.3 million this year, all for children's cancer. So it's a pretty powerful tool. It's become kind of a seasoned event that people look forward to. We have a huge following in a Facebook group on that. They're very supportive of each other. We've really kind of created this ecosystem of, you know, cyclists that want to do good for kids.
And it's specifically for kids' cancer?
It is, yeah. So the money for that event is directed to the Garin Family Cancer Center at SickKids Hospital, which then the funds from that are earmarked for nationally based programs. So
okay, that's what I was going to ask you, because what I think is there's a couple really neat nuggets in there that are, I think, really good for people to learn and learn from. But then also a couple things that stand out for me. You said it's Canada wide supporting a Toronto based charity. So the digital platform has allowed you to do that. Do you market in all of those? Do you partner with other kids' cancer charities? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So our marketing is a digitally based marketing campaign. So very heavy in Facebook advertising, as well as a few other channels, obviously organic search, and we'll display a few things like that. But, you know, for the most part, our success has come from kind of the Facebook marketing side of things.
Cool.
So we are able to target different regions, and we definitely advertise on a national basis. I think where our message becomes strong is that, you know, we are supporting children's cancer research across Canada, as SickKids does anyway. We are the largest research facility in North America for a pediatric hospital. And, you know, our research does have a global impact, but, you know, what the Cancer Center has done in working with Dr. Whitlock at the Cancer Center, he basically takes the funds that are donated to the Cancer Center and earmarks those for nationally based programs. So whether it's clinical trials or navigators for patient families or different programs that will have a national impact, they created a position where families can call in and have a navigator guide them through kind of the drug world of cancer chemotherapy so that they can understand and kind of really get a hands-on approach to where that goes. So it's been very interesting to do this. And, you know, we've raised quite a bit of money since 2016 for cancer research. And
yeah, you kind of said 8.3 million, like it didn't even like put sweat on your brow. Yeah. So, those are numbers that you get to see. And there's same time you took a risk and you put something online, you franchised maybe that's not the right word, but you somewhat franchised a model of someone else's.
Yeah.
And made it work for you in an extraordinary way. So what it tells other nonprofits that are listening is that you don't have to do everything in-house. You know, you are a powerhouse. You are one of the biggest. You can afford to have a team in-house. Mm-hmm. You can only afford to have a team in-house because you raise the money. The money wasn't there, you wouldn't have the team, right? Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. And the other thing that I love, and expenses should be lowish on a digital
definitely
campaign.
Lower yeah for sure
lower Absolutely. I mean, obviously marketing and advertising isn't inexpensive.
Cost per dollar is much lower than a traditional peer-to-peer event for sure
And what I love is that also is I find a lot of nonprofits are like, well, oh my gosh, we can't do too many events, we can't always be in market, where you just told us you do an event in August that raises 8.3 million. which you're obviously asking people to, you know, register and participate in, at the same time that you're promoting people to register and participate in your Kids Get Loud event, mm-hmm. Kids Get Loud, and that is in September.
Yes.
So that kind of throws that whole, like, oh my God, I can't do too much, mm-hmm. which is a bit of, you know, a sacred cow, which you and I talk about sacred cows in this space all the time. Here's yes. one of them that you need to be in market. And if it's a different offering, it can live in market mm-hmm. at the same time. Would you, I mean, obviously you might agree, but do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, we're very conscious of the resource capabilities of a team, you know, because you can't just work everybody to the bone all the time. Granted, it is very busy season for sure. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about the other two events that we do, which are in May and June.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of just runs back to back to back to back. But that's, I don't think, dissimilar to most of our colleagues in this industry. It's,
yeah,
you know, there's always,
season.
there is. And, you know, I think, but the season now seems to go all year round. Not that you're running an event all year round, but now you're planning or preparing or, you know, reimagining, and you take that time. And so it never really goes away, right?
Which I think that's really key, Jamie, because I think there's been a lot of like that thinking that it has to start, stop. But in my opinion, and I'm sure yours is similar, you can't build a community, like get people on board, like, hey, come to our event, get them really excited, have the event, and then be like, we're going to talk to you in 6 months.
Yeah.
Like it's once you start it, to your point, it doesn't stop.
No.
And so what is maintenance? It's not a very nice word, but what do you do to keep people engaged throughout the year for these events?
Yeah. You know, it's a great question. You know, there's definitely some conversations that go on, mostly through like social media channels or a few emails here and there. You know, we do go a little quieter than you would during an event season where you're hitting them up, you know, probably twice a week with email correspondence, you know, this is what's happening. Hey, get your fundraising going. It's more about, you know, kind of, hey, this is what's happening, or this is the, you know, this is what your funds are going to help, or, you know, so just keeping them engaged for sure. I don't think you can ever really turn that channel off. And we do a lot of,
well,
like,
I don't think you should. I think you will do, but I don't think you should.
I know we do. We definitely, when we survey event participants, you know, following the event, we do ask about, you know, the communication timeline and, you know, do they feel we communicate too much, too little, you know, is it too pushy, whatever, just to gauge the temperature of the community too. And, you know, I would say the most, you know, you'll always get people that say, yeah, I get way too many emails from you. But I think for the most part, people that are doing these events for us as charities, they're there because of the cause, you know, and so they understand that there's a certain pattern to this. And, you know, I think if you can find that, you know, that magic recipe for your own audience, then that's golden. But yeah, right. I don't think you should ever turn it off.
No, I would agree. Yeah. I think it's important. I mean, you know, Old Navy emails me 7 times a day to tell me that. Not only do they email me, they also text message me. I don't actually get mad. I leave it, delete it, or when I actually need jeans or something for a kid.
Sure.
And I'm like, yes, they're right there and they're top of mind.
Sure.
And so I think I think another sacred cow is like, we can't email people too much because we're going to piss them off. And I think that's,
yeah, but you'll do that to some.
Most of that has gone away, sure, given things have changed. Yeah. But
you'll do that to some people for sure. You're never going to make everybody happy. So I think you just have to find that comfort zone. And, you know, there's lots to learn from industry experience too. Like, you know, don't just look at what other charities are doing.
Right.
Look what industry is doing, right?
Right?
Because, you know, these companies spend a ton of money and a ton of resource on building community. And, you know, whether you're using Salesforce and a donor channel through that, or whether you're using, you know, Blackbaud CRM or Razor's Edge, like, utilize the marketing experience that you have and the databases that you own, you know, and look at other avenues too. Like, you know, I said before, we spend a lot of time and energy in the digital marketing space just because, you know, ROI is a lot easier to justify and prove in there, just because, you know, clicks and things can be tracked. But that's not to say that's the only avenue you should concentrate on.
I think
there's still a space for traditional marketing efforts that we all need to kind of engage in. And, you know, I think it would behoove a lot of us to spend some time getting to know what, you know, what the intricacies of digital marketing are, and you know how that all comes into play in the marketing mix that we do for our events.
Right. And I think it's important. You've said a few things like use your databases. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know how, take advantage of all the people that work at those organizations who can literally help you walk through. Like, obviously you have a department that does that, but if you're a smaller, mid to smaller charity or nonprofit who doesn't have the people, that's what, you know, your sales reps are for, and your customer support people are for at your tech companies. They're there to help you use the tool as best as you can.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if I put my entrepreneur hat and my corporate hat on, you know, email marketing is still by far comes up at the top of, you know, marketing efforts is building your lists. Mm-hmm. So even if you're not emailing people all the time, or you go from like 10 emails a month leading up to the event, then you go to one or two because you don't want them to forget about you. You know, do you do anything that allows people on all of your event platforms for you to capture people? So, oh my gosh, I just got back from Scrubs, which I want to hear about as well. I just got back from Scrubs. It was amazing. And I've just told this great story at a cocktail party. Is there a place for someone to go and like look up Scrubs and leave their email address? Mm-hmm. Is there? Oh, maybe there should be.
There probably, yeah. No, and good points, right? Like there's always learning to do. No,
right.
Nobody does it perfectly, and we're always learning too. So, you know, I have the luxury of having a big platform to play with and a cause that everybody knows, but that's not to say that, you know, ABC charity or fundraising organization can't do the same. You know,
right.
It's just how you, what the priority you place on that and sure. You know, how that fits into your mix.
And scale.
Yeah.
I mean, like
one point I wanted to bring up was, you know, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, like when organizations have, you know, multifaceted fundraising tools, be it major gifts team, corporate partnerships team, direct and digital marketing, whatever that looks like, there tends to be a bit of like who owns the donor syndrome, right? Because, and it's not, I don't want to say it's nobody's fault because it's not, or I want to say it's nobody's fault. It's nobody's fault.
Yeah.
I think what we need to all do though is learn how to open our minds, all of us, not just those other groups other than events mm-hmm. too. How do we maximize the data that we have? Because data is the ultimate element, right? Like
everything
we do, subscription bases and, you know, piece like that, they're all after your data. They want your names and your contact information so that they can market the wazoo out of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, you know, I think organizations, big and small, struggle because, you know, you can get a major gift donor that'll give you $1 million, but then it you know, you need 100 of those, you know, peer-to-peer people potentially to get to $1 million or 1,000 of them.
Right.
Get you to $1 million. So, you know, where's the easier road or where's the, you know, the less labor intensive road? I guess you could argue they're both labor intensive because
right.
it's a journey. But I think if we were all on the same page of how we use donor information and the donor base that we have to the maximum potential, I think it would benefit us all. And that's an ongoing process at any shop, I think.
Well, and I think it makes me think of, you know, when we talk about donors and participants, we're talking about human beings. Yeah. And a major donor isn't better than a peer-to-peer fundraiser. They just have different means. Mm-hmm. Because a peer-to-peer fundraiser could raise $1 million. They're just not making a one check.
Right.
And if you're not looking at your donors as people and listening to them and having those conversations, then you don't know that you're a peer-to-peer fundraiser. I mean, it makes me think of, it was one of the bike rides that Madame Holmes guy.
Oh yeah. Peter Gilgan. Yeah.
Peter Gilgan. Mm-hmm. His story is he came in through a bike ride, a third party bike ride. He loved it. He was introduced to the cause and then he became one of SickKids' largest donors. Mm-hmm. And so I think you bring up a good point in terms of everybody needs to work together. Mm-hmm. because you might also find a major donor who really likes the bike ride and you're like, yes, let's invite them to the bike ride versus leaving them in these like lanes we've put them in.
Yeah.
Versus absolutely. Looking at them as people and getting to know them and understand how they want to interact with our organization and our different brands, essentially. You know, naming a building could be seen as a brand or a product. It is a product. Same thing as like running or walking or going to Scrubs.
Exactly.
So it's looking at people as humans.
Yeah, like a holistic approach to the donor. And I think a lot of fundraising entities now are really doing that. They're spending more time at looking at the complete donor experience and how do we best create a relationship with them? Yeah. It's kind of like online dating, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you create someone, like we all know in the marketing world, if you have someone that knows and likes you and trusts you, they're hanging around.
Yeah.
You know, like my hairdresser might be different than your hairdresser, but my hairdresser,
I have no hair.
My hairdresser, I go to, like, I don't want to find a new one. I'm super loyal. I even in the event business still use my caterer that I used 20 years ago because I knew what they could deliver. Mm-hmm. And so their value to me over time has been extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same thing in our nonprofits, is that our donors, our customers, our community is key to our success.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And we need them to buy tickets to come to our event. So you've got your signature event. Mm-hmm. So you've got your signature event that you guys run in-house, which is Get Loud. Then would you consider Great Cycle Challenge a signature event? It's just a different...
Yeah, I think it's
signature to you guys.
I would probably look at it
of how it's set up.
Yeah, probably more like a partnership event.
Okay, I love that.
If you really want it, because really,
talk to me about partnership events.
Yeah, like partnership events to me are events that are potentially somebody else's idea, or it could be, you know, the idea that my team has come up with, but then we partner with an agency to run and execute. So you know, we kind of take the resource piece and lighten the load on the team. And mm-hmm. allow the agency partner with their expertise to kind of execute on whether it's logistics or communications or whatever that looks like. Yeah. So, you know, we definitely, I would say Great Cycle Challenge is very much like that. Like, you know, cool. we as SickKids, we run the donor experience. We are the ones that are communicating with the donor on a daily basis or whatever that looks like through emails and things. But the agency runs kind of or oversees the platform. And, you know, the digital aspects of the event mm-hmm. that are making sure they definitely help, you know, they definitely oversee the media buy. So they're kind of experts in kind of digital marketing, you know, but everything is done with stories that we provide that we've curated through patient ambassadors or, you know, other things through the cancer center so that it kind of creates this maximum impact event through that true partnership. And,
right.
you know, we're both... We meet, you know, regularly. We're in constant communication. So there's very much a symbiotic relationship there between an agency and us to make sure the success of the event, you know, takes place.
Because you're both driven for the success.
Totally.
That's awesome.
Totally.
So you've got signature events, partnership events, and then tell me about your third party event portfolio, which is pretty awesome at SickKids.
Yeah. So third party, you know, I've definitely run through somebody else and somebody very capable, Katie McHugh Escobar.
Of course. Shout out to Katie. Yeah.
It's a, you know, again, a massive portfolio, about 1,000 community events a year happen. And that could be anything from a car wash to lemonade stands to golf tournaments to poker events that, you know, raise on average, you know, at the height of things was probably, you know, $12-13 million a year for SickKids. Yeah. And that's all done through, you know, grateful patients and families and corporations that have been touched by SickKids and want to give back. So pretty amazing community of people. And Katie's team does, you know, their job is really the relationship marketing side of things.
Yeah,
really
big time.
Is really
talking. Katie on to chat with us about that.
For sure. You know, like
she's
talking to people, engaging people, keeping them coming back, you know, and continuing to grow that portfolio. So it's a pretty powerful tool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think other organizations have similar ventures like that where grateful patients or families want to give back and, you know, they do different things. And, you know, it's definitely something I would say to look at and you know, and try and grow in your own shops for sure.
Well, and it's, I will, I'm going to reach out to Katie. I know this isn't always her favorite space to be on center stage, but she's been in the business for a long time. And I think she'd be greatly impactful to our nonprofit event pros who are in the third party space for
Absolutely. Yeah. She's got a lot of tips and tricks there for sure.
She sure does.
Yeah.
So you have sponsorship in your, do you have any other events you want to talk about? Cause I'm curious about, about sponsorship as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think from, you know, from an events perspective now, we have two other events that I haven't mentioned yet. One is Scrubs in the City, which has been a long time running and your regular attendee.
Yes, I am.
With all your bells and whistles on. You know, I think I best describe it as like an upscale, you know, garage type house party. Like, I don't know, maybe garage is the right word.
I love that you just use the word garage.
Garage party.
Listeners, like, if you knew the people in the outfits that came to this party, because I am a regular supporter of this event. I was a part of bringing it back to its signature level at SickKids, or taking it there. And Jamie and his team have taken it to incredible heights, and it's really fun, but it's a party of the year.
Yeah, it's a pretty good party.
It's an extraordinary crowd of supporters.
Yeah. You know, and that is really, that is our kind of closest we get to a gala.
Yeah.
Or gala from our American friends. You know, so I would say, you know, it's geared at it's a little more upscale. You know, obviously there's a higher cost to attend. It's very, you know, there's a lot of corporate partners there that are, you know, in lounges. And then there's, you know, the ticket buyers who come and have a similar experience, just not in kind of like a, you know, a formal lounge setting with, you know, bottle service and things like that. So definitely has grown and definitely grown in popularity. We sell out every year. We barely have to market the event,
it's
which
extraordinary.
Knock on wood, we're very fortunate for having an extremely strong committee that helps pull that event off. And, you know, kudos to them for all the support and things that they've done over the years for the growth of this event. But the community, you know, I would say like the demographic of that audience is kind of fluctuated a little bit now. I know, I think it definitely skews a little bit younger now, which is great, but people want to come out and be seen and have a great time. And that's what that event does. And it, you know, and it definitely raises some significant money. I think we hit $1 million for that event, I think for the first time last year or the year before. So, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, it's an event that we definitely cherish and want to keep growing and, or at least maintaining and, you know, keep relevant in the community.
Well, and I love what you say, because being a guest there this year, a couple things that I love that you do about Scrubs, which is probably interesting to those listening, is while it has the name Scrubs in the City, every year the theme changes. So you're the intrigue of what is going to be the theme, you unveil it really fun at the actual event, you tease it out, and then you, you know, announce it. So the theme changes every year, which is kind of cool. So it's not the same thing. So it's, you want to be a part of it. And I also noticed the younger folk there this year. And I asked a couple of the committee members, I was like, what is this? And they're like, it's our kids. And I was like, right. My kid could come next year because he'll be 19.
Yeah.
So what I think is extraordinary is that you've had this committee, because we all thought we were young 10 years ago when we were going to it. But this party, this event is so cool and done so well that your committee also wants to bring their children. And now those kids want to bring their friends.
Yeah.
Which is gold. And it may not even be anything that anyone could have predicted.
No.
But it's something that others, I think, can pay attention to.
For sure.
And literally put it on their radar in terms of like, how do you make this cool so that the committee's kids want to come?
Yeah. And, it, you know, again, I talked about it earlier. It totally eliminates the need to really have to market this event. Like, we're pretty much, in terms of like the corporate lounges or the sponsored lounges.
Talk to me a little bit about those corporate lounges. It's really great.
So we've kind of come up with this concept where about half the audience are part of these lounges that can be purchased for various dollar levels. So the bigger the lounge or the better placement in the space, the more it costs. So, you know, a lot of the lounges are purchased by corporate partners. So they range anywhere from our title sponsor who comes in at $75,000 to $50,000 to $25,000 to $15,000 to, you know, $12,500.
And so within that sponsorship.
Yeah.
Once you get a booth.
You get a booth, basically. Okay. So it's very similar to going to a club, which I haven't been to a club in probably 20 years. But,
it's been a while. Scrubs is like the only club I go to now.
Exactly. But, you know, you get the full service. You get food brought to your lounge, your guests. You know, there's 10 to 12 guests in the lounge. There's bottle service there. So, you know, we're very attentive to the needs of, mm-hmm. of that group. And people really love that. And those lounges are generally sold out.
So good.
As soon as the event is over. You know, right. We have a lot of repeat customers. There's always the need for more. People want more lounges. We only have so much space. So
In our garage.
I don't know why I said garage. It's just
kinda, I love it.
I love garage parties, by the way.
I love it.
Yeah.
It could be. I mean, that's what the brickwork started out like.
Kind of, yeah. Very much, you know, very much the environment. But, and then, you know, we've got a lot of activities going on for people to engage in. The food is phenomenal. Great partners there with the caterers and different restaurants for the cities that are themed. And yeah, it's just a good all around night of entertainment, fun, food, and fashion. So it's pretty cool.
Well, and I think it's been really well thought out and curated. So what Scrubs has done, which other people I would like them to learn from, is that that hospitality element really exists. Mm-hmm. It's not just buy a ticket, come, and then go into this big empty space.
Yeah.
It is literally thought about and curated. If you have a booth, you have someone who welcomes you at a certain check-in area. You are walked to your booth. You have a booth attendant. Like, it is hospitality at its best. That stuff doesn't cost money.
Yeah.
Like, treating people and giving them that, like, surprise and delight moment doesn't cost money. It just takes some thought.
Yeah.
And I think Scrubs has nailed it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the team and the committee have done a very awesome job of, you know, making sure that that event stays new, fresh, and relevant every year. So it's all cool.
And the theme next year is, or this year is Greece.
Yes.
Mykonos. And you and I talked about sand on the dance floor.
Yes, I blocked that out of my mind.
I'm going to send you some sand.
Nah, see what happens. I think the team is very inventive with what they do, roof decor or, you know, different things. So I'm sure something very unique and cool will happen there.
It's going to be magic.
Yeah.
Tell me about sponsorship. It's elusive. Do some people do it well? They don't do it well. It's working. It's not working. Corporate doesn't have any money. Like, you and I could probably sit and talk about all the things people say about sponsorship that may or may not be true.
Yeah.
So you have that in your title. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So at SickKids, we have a corporate partnerships team that really are the driving engine and the sales force, if you want to say, behind, you know, creating or going out and selling our properties to their corporate partners. So, you know, what I do and the team of corporate people on my team do is we curate those opportunities and those, you know, I don't want to call them packages, but it's really the architecture behind what we're trying to sell through an event, because we all know that sponsors are pretty critical to, you know, the financing of an event generally. Usually corporate partners, you know, help offset the cost of an event significantly.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we utilize a couple of experts on our team to really build strong architecture around it. So it's not just about gold, silver, bronze. It's more about what's the opportunity that makes the most sense for you as a sponsor or as a corporate partner in this event, and how do we execute on that? So, you know, my team is really more involved in the strategy behind the architecture. And then the activation piece. So really,
and bringing it to life, If TD is a sponsor, then maybe those who may not be Canadian based, TD is a bank, their color is green, they're known for their lounge chairs. Yeah. So maybe you bring that to life at an event or something like that. But it's really about bringing it to an experience level for participants to experience the sponsor's brand, as well as the sponsor to be wowed once you're at an event.
Exactly. And working, you know, hand in hand with the corporate partner relationship manager, as well as the corporate partner themselves. You know, we kind of run that as a tight group so that, you know, satisfaction is high. You know, our goal is to have them return year over year. So, you know, that's where we spend a lot of time and effort kind of making sure that our not only the opportunities make sense, but the events properties make sense to the appropriate partner.
Yeah. What is one of your favorite sponsorship activations that you've had at one of your SickKids events?
Ooh. Jeepers.
I always like it when there's a booze sponsor at Scrubs because I get a fun cocktail.
Yeah, for sure. I think like one of the fun pieces, and I loved it this year, was Sobeys did like kind of a marching band kind of activation on the route at Get Loud. So as part of the walk, when you got to the halfway point, there was this kind of there was a brass band playing. And like they were fun and they were dancing around and people loved it. Like family stayed there for a few minutes and really kind of engaged with them. It was, I think the sponsor really loved it, that there was so much interaction and, you know, their brand was everywhere. And I think that that really kind of, you know, made the sponsor feel great, but also a total fun thing for the participant to engage in too. So I think that's kind of one of the more, there's many like,
yeah, for sure.
but I think that one,
I'll think about all of them later after we finish our conversation.
Oh my, the rest of the corporate partners that listen to this now are probably going to go, oh, why didn't they mention this?
What? As we get close to wrapping up, give me three things that you think is important, and maybe you have five, maybe you have one, but three is just a nice number. Three things that you think, no matter what size of your shop, your event team or event expert should, whether it be a quality, a tool, something they should think about. Three pieces of advice from Jamie.
I think number one, and you know, you'll hear this from probably any life coach or business coach or whatever, is whatever you do, do it well. You know, and you don't always have to do everything, but what you're doing, do it well. So if you have a gala or a walk or a run, do it as best you can. Make it the best experience possible, because that's what's going to keep people coming back. Two is, I think, you know, really keep an eye on the market. Like there's, and not just Canada, don't just, you know, don't just look at in your own backyard. I would look elsewhere. Like, you know, check out what they're doing in Australia, check out what they're doing in England, like the US, obviously, you know, but I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned and you can pick and choose. Like that's the beauty of, you know, being able to share and to, you know, and make some phone calls, like, you know, reach out to people. Cause you know, I can tell you, I have a lot of conversations with different organizations, individuals, whatever, that, you know, I'm not adverse to sharing what we do. It's not a secret. It's very much, you know, If it's going to help your cause and your charity, I'm more than happy to share what, you know, lessons learned, good and bad.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where I would kind of send people off with are those little tidbits. Yeah.
Well, and I'm really hopeful that our conversation and the conversations I'm going to continue to have on Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro is really a part of helping this community of nonprofit event professionals come together. You know, having you as my first guest means a lot to my heart, but it also means a lot, in my opinion, to the culture of this space that's out there. You and I have had so many conversations about how we live on our own islands in this space, because there's not resource for us or places for us to gather, you know, or to meet or like a forum. And so I'm really hopeful, where one of the biggest goals of this podcast is that so we can add some voices and then get to know each other and, you know, actually reach out to one another. Because I know for all you listeners, Jamie means it. If you want to talk to him, you get in touch. And so with that, Jamie, how can our listeners get a hold of you if they wanted to?
Happy to provide my email address.
Please do it. Yeah. Or your home phone number. But let's start with email.
Email, it's jamie.lamont, L-A-M-O-N-T, at sickkidsfoundation.com. So yeah, just send me an email and I'd be happy to set up a conversation, because I think this Canadian nonprofit event space, we do great things in this space. We see amazing events year after year. It's great that we can learn and share with each other and help each other out. So happy to do that.
Awesome. And I'll make sure that I put your email address in the show notes. Jamie, from the top and bottom of my heart, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. I can guarantee this won't be the last time that we hear from you. Might be selfish, but I also think it'll be educational for others. To your team who supports you and to you, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks for putting this platform up for us to be able to share. So always a pleasure speaking with you, as you know.
Thanks so much for listening and doing good in the world. We see you. We can't wait for you to join us next time when we hear from another good human who will share their story, along with tips and tricks that will help you execute extraordinary events that are sure to have a lasting impact on your participants, beneficiaries, donors, and colleagues. Make sure you follow Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review the show so other nonprofit event pros just like you can find our podcast so they too can create events that matter. Tune in next week to laugh, cry, and cheer with us on another episode of Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro. See you soon. Hey, good human. Are you hitting roadblocks with your events and marketing and need a bit of help to take it to the next level? We've got you. Sign up for our monthly hot seat coaching where we will answer your questions live on the podcast. That's right. You'll get to join me, Amy Milne, and my colleague, Lisa Cohen, right here on Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast. And we will share our expertise to help you with your specific questions. Sound good? Great. Fill out the quick form by following the link in the show notes and we'll take it from there. We're stoked to have you on the podcast, good human listener, to guide you through your current challenges. Keep it real.